This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we have two topics today. The main topic of our show is Arizona-Mexico business and trade issues. There will be a surprise commentary, however, in our fourth segment at the close of the hour. Our guest, Patrick Welsh, attorney with Jennings Strauss, Tara Jackson, president of Arizona Town Hall, and Hector Plasencia, founder of BRH2 Plastic. He's a businessman with interest on both sides of the border. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Let me throw out to all of you, if I could, what can you tell me about the current state of trade between the U.S. and Mexico, and particularly between Arizona and Mexico?
Well, I would say, first off, that the trading relationship between Arizona and Mexico is robust. I think that's the best way to describe it. You've got Arizona you have Mexico as Arizona's number one trading partner, which is a significant milestone. What's exciting to see is the level of increased cooperation between the two states, particularly the two governors, over the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that Mexico is Arizona's number one trading part. But in information you sent me, the change is that now at a national level, Mexico is the American U.S. number one trading partner, and that represents a change.
Yeah, I'd say a sea change, and I think Hector can probably comment on some of the reasons why that's happening.
I would think the big one is that a lot of U.S.-Chinese trade has been kiboshed. Right?
You hit it right on the head. That's exactly right. As some of the American-Chinese trade war that continues, and part of it's rhetoric, part of it is real, right? The tariffs that hit in place is a lot of large clients that are trying to get away around that, and Mexico now is becoming a place of consideration where before it wasn't the case. Mexico was something that looked at as, yeah, they're close, but do they really have the skill sets? Do they have all the infrastructure in place? They really do. It just wasn't considered before.
Mm-hmm. And I think most people say what it takes to make trade, or what helps with trade, is that you have complementary economies.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So, I mean, in contrast, for example, U.S.-Canadian trade, where we are so similar to Canada, there are some things that are traded, but there isn't the opportunity for that kind of extra gain that you get when you're sort of trading with folks whose economy already resembles yours. You make A, B, and C. I make D, E, and F, and there's symbiosis there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, for example, like if you look at the supply chain management that you have going on between Arizona in particular and Sonora, you've got your main producer, for example, at the Ford plant down in Hermosillo, and you've got clusters of second, third, first-tier suppliers in and around those plants. Mm-hmm. Those clusters extend into Arizona right here in our valley. So you see a direct impact of that relationship going on cross-border all the time. Parts are moving across the border instantaneously, on an ongoing basis, which is really good to see.
I think that's one thing that most people don't get. They think of products as being made in one place. But if you're putting together automobiles, you got parts from all over that are moving back and forth the border, depending on which side of production you're on. And that there's a lot more to automobiles than final assembly.
For sure. I mean, if you look at the new components of the U.S.-Mexico-Canadian trade agreement, for example, one of the big important provisions in there is the increase in the amount of components that need to come from one side or the other in terms of final completion of the product, which is a big thing that was being fought for on the U.S. side in terms of the renegotiation of NAFTA, which is now called our mm-hmm. USMCA.
We're getting ahead of where I was going to go, but I failed to understand, and I was going to get there later, but since you mentioned it, let me do that. USMCA is the revised NAFTA. It's not yet – it's being held up in Congress. It's not yet been passed, but it has been negotiated. It sits in front of – what are the differences between that and NAFTA?
Well, you know, there's a big debate going on about that. You know, those that say there are not a lot of changes are focusing on such things as the lack of any enforcement mechanisms in the agreement. And that's been, you know, a big criticism of a lot of U.S. Bilateral trade agreements is the lack of an enforcement mechanism.
Enforcement for what?
Enforcement of the actual rules themselves.
Like environmental regulations?
Environmental. So, you know, you talk about the new components of the USMCA. So you're going to see more stringent requirements on environmental issues. You see, we talked about the auto industry. What I was describing earlier is called rules of origin, is what they call those. It strengthens labor standards and rights in the Mexican labor market, which is important for the U.S. labor market because they want to make sure that they're competing on even ground with Mexican labor as well.
There's some provisions in there, aren't there, for even average wages have to be at a certain level?
Correct. Yep. So,
which would tend to minimize or at least partially offset wage differentials.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big concerns that people had a number of years ago, and I think those concerns continue today, is are U.S. manufacturers moving to Mexico for the purposes of seeking lower wages. And I think that by having that
– Is there any question about that?
No, I think there isn't. But I think when you look at the efforts in the USMCA to try to level the playing ground, mm-hmm. You know, that's certainly helpful. I mean, I think one of the components – and I think Hector and Tara can probably speak to this as well – is the issue of the fact that one of the reasons why the auto industry was leaving Detroit, for example, was not necessarily because you had – wage imbalances between the two countries, but because there was technology advancements that caused jobs to disappear. And I think that's an important consideration as well. I mean, I don't know if you're seeing that with your businesses.
Well, I was going to take a different spin on that from sort of the average Arizona and why should we care about building this relationship with Mexico? Patrick started out by saying there's a very robust economic relationship that we have with Mexico, we as the state of Arizona. What I would add to that is that it could be so much more. If the concerns are about the economy, how do we make good wages? How do we have income for our state to fund our public education system and the other services we need? Then as Arizona, with this incredible opportunity next door to us, we can build those relationships and create even better economies by creating products together that are sent around the world. Now, that's the opportunity.
In what areas do you see that opportunity presenting itself? Where's the gain? What does it require?
Well, I think manufacturing is one of the big ones, and I'm going to kind of bounce this over to Hector because that's his expertise.
Yeah. You know what? Why don't we take a break? When we come back in just a minute, we'll do that. And I want to talk about your business, what you do, and then we'll answer that question. When we come back in just a moment, we'll be back in the think tank talking U.S.-Mexico trade relationships.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're continuing our discussion of Arizona and Mexico business and trade issue with Patrick Welsh from Jennings Strauss, Tara Jackson, President Arizona Town Hall, and Hector Plasencia. And Hector, we're going to you. We were talking about first of all, tell us about you have businesses on both sides of the border. Tell us what the nature of that is.
Yeah, so we're really a manufacturer of plastic injection molding factory in Hermosillo, Sonora, which is about 3 hours south of the Arizona-Mexico border. We actually have our headquarters here. It's our sales and business development office here based in Tempe. It's BRH2 Plastics. You know, it's our four partners, Bruce, Ryan, and two Hectors. That's how we came up with the BRH2. People think it's a formula. It's not.
it sounded.
And so we have a manufacturing factory down in Hermosillo. We have about a 70,000 square foot facility doing plastic parts for Ford.
So you're doing manufacturing in Mexico, selling in the U.S. or
most of the stuff that gets manufactured, we have a few baby product companies that actually everything gets exported to the U.S. Ford has a huge plant in Hermosillo. That's where they build the Ford Fusion. Mm-hmm. So we do parts for them, but those parts actually stay in Mexico. Mm-hmm. The ironic part is
they're put in cars.
They're put in cars, exactly. Then they get exported to. So it's a little bit of a delay
To the U.S.
The U.S. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the U.S. market cars. The Lincoln MKZ and the Ford Fusion is built mm-hmm. there. as well as P&G has a huge deal with a company called Zobelli. They do the Airwick and Febreze, and those type of products are done there. We do some plastic parts for them as well.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about what you, we were talking about differences in management style during the break.
I wonder if you might
That's a good segue here. I think people say, what are the differences from a cultural perspective between U.S. and Mexico? And as we know, every country has their different way of managing employees. I think the U.S. does a wonderful job from a global management and leadership styles. We've learned that along the way, a little softer skills, if you will. I think when you get into Mexico, it's a little heavier handed in terms of how the managers get their employees to do what they want them or what they need them to do. The employees are used to not so much having a voice in decisions and how things are ran. Interesting for me, it's one of my biggest roadblocks that I got there is again, being an owner of the business and having a pretty good management staff. One of the things I ran into with them was really getting them to manage the way that I felt that we should manage within our four walls.
Now, your managers down in Mexico, are they indigenous Mexicans? Are there folks that you brought down there? Or?
No, these are Mexican homegrown, managers.
Okay. Now, so you're dealing with a lot of import-export issues. So USMCA has got to be... And the NAFTA produced, that has to affect you a lot.
It did, I'll tell
now,
you.
Now, we're in an uncertain position as far as USMCA. Tell me how that uncertainty affects you.
Well, I think the uncertainty now, because it's been uncertain for quite some time now, but I would say 6 months, 8 months ago, the uncertainty, there was some rhetoric that was driving some negative, negative approach to it, right? Whether it's going to happen or not, is there going to be a Mexican tariff and those kinds of things. Where we're at today, if I fast forward it to present time, it's a lot more comforting to our clients. And again, these are Fortune 500 clients that we're dealing with. Initially, they were a little bit nervous about, do I want my goods made in Mexico? Is it going to be another situation?
If they're going to slap a big tariff on, it's no longer going to be economic. Therefore, do I want to invest in this mega plant?
And not even the tariff, right? It was just is made in Mexico negative, with some of the rhetoric that was going on? Mm-hmm. I'll say it anti-Mexico, if I dare say it that way, is what it felt like, about a year ago. It's not so much the case anymore. I think things are a lot better. Our clients kind of did a little bit of a wait and see. And once things felt better and the tariff didn't go through and on the Mexican side, they said, okay, this is something we need to consider.
Let me pick up on that point with Terry. You just ran a town hall in Mexico with a joint American-Mexican constituency and ask you about some of the political rhetoric that has started on this kind of the border and to what extent that has impacted trade relations.
Well, I'll tell you what I hear. And what I hear is that people who live in Mexico or who want to do business in the United States, specifically Arizona, the rhetoric has a huge impact. One of the cultural differences that I've come to learn about doing business in Mexico is that it is much more about building relationships and having a foundation of trust. When you feel like, based on political rhetoric and negative comments, when you feel like there's not trust or a good relationship, clearly there's not the same interest or strength in the business relationships. I've heard that the last several years that we have held a town hall in Hermosillo, and I'm sure Hector and Patrick may also be hearing that. It doesn't help businesses in Arizona. It doesn't help businesses in the United States when that kind of rhetoric is being talked about.
Yeah, I've heard from my clients the same thing. We advise clients on both sides of the borders, Arizonans or other from other states in the United States looking to invest down in Mexico or Mexicans looking to come north. And the rhetoric certainly destroys trust levels. But right. To Hector's point about being during the break, Hector was talking to us about how he's going down to Mexico every week and he's there Tuesday to Thursday or Tuesday to Friday. One of the biggest things that I've found with my clients is advising them is that you've got to have boots on the ground in Mexico. I mean, if you're going to go and invest as an Arizona company in Massachusetts, the logical thing is you want to have boots on the ground in Massachusetts. The same thing applies if you're looking to go to Mexico, and probably even a little bit more, just given some of the comments Hector had about different management styles. Visiting frequent and often is important for overseeing and managing the business. But to the point of what Tara made a moment ago about trust, I remember reading a book in college by Francis Fukuyama called Trust. It talked about the Japanese relationships in the economy between labor and management, et cetera. And you see the exact types of same things resonating in Hermosillo. You know, I jokingly said at the Arizona-Mexico Commission Summit, and Hector and I were together on that adventure back in November, was the importance of a carne asada. Mike, do you know what a carne asada is?
I sure do.
All right, great. So, you know, for those who don't know, it's basically steak tacos. But in Hermosillo –
Whether without the tacos.
Exactly. In Hermosillo, you know, and Sonora in particular, which is known for its beef worldwide. You know, I'm married to a Mexican from Hermosillo, and all I heard about for the first – year of my marriage with my wife was how good the meat is down there. But having a carne asada where, you know, people are at someone's home and you're putting the meat on the grill and people are saying, well, no, the carbone, the charcoal's not ready yet. You can't put the meat on yet. And then there's a further discussion about, all right, do you put the salt on after or before the blood comes out of the meat? I mean, all of these types of dynamics that are going on in these conversations build such important relationships for people that you have to do this to be able to be successful in Mexico. I mean, Hector, we've talked about this so many times. I mean, how many carne asadas have you been to in your lifetime?
A lot of business has been around there for sure.
Okay. I'll add the fruits and vegetables are good too. I think a lot of ours come from there. They're just fresher when you're starting south of the border.
Absolutely.
We will be back in a concluding segment talking about Arizona-Mexico trade relations when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank Talking Mexico.
It sounds so sweet with the sun sinking low. The moon so bright, nights are light up the night. Think everything all right.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We continue to talk to our guest, Patrick Welch at Jennings Strauss, Tara Jackson, President, Arizona Town Hall, Hector Plasencia, about Arizona-Mexico trade issues. And Hector, you set up a business down in Mexico, and you're involved in import issues. Talk us through what was involved in doing that, and how'd you figure out how to do that?
I think between my partners and I, we figured out how to do that. But just asking a lot of questions before we actually just we kind of put our toe in the water first. Mm-hmm. Ask some folks down there that are in the business community, really understand what are the differences between here and there, right? That was the first thing. Do we want to put a business in Mexico?
What'd they tell you? What'd they tell you the differences are?
You know, I think the biggest thing is they're saying, hey, there's a lot of red tape. There's corruption everywhere, right? And so you have to kind of right away you get this caution of, you know, how do I know that I'm doing this correctly? How do I know who do I have to pay? What agency needs to get involved? So the first thing we really did was we got an international attorney that's based here in Arizona as well as in Hermosillo, and set up our LLC here and set up the equivalent. It's called SRL or SRL in Mexico. And same thing with the CPA. We have a CPA here based in Phoenix. We have a CPA based out there in Hermosillo. We knew we wanted to, you always want to do things correctly anyway.
So you got some overhead on the front end.
It is overhead, and that's where I was going to go next. Is that it's expensive to do it right. What we didn't want to do is, I mean, myself as a U.S. citizen did not want to find myself getting myself in any trouble and doing business and doing things that later on I find out that I'm not doing it correctly and could be bad for the business and bad for myself personally.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned corruption. Mm-hmm. How bad is it and where is it?
Ironically, I say it this way. I have not seen it. It's there in the police, right? As people talk about, if you get pulled over,
But that's not impacting your business.
Not impacting my business.
Yeah, the way they do that, by the way, is they pull you over and say, well, you know, this is what the fine is, and you can pay it right here if you want, or else we can take you in the station. It'll take 3 or 4 hours before you're out.
Actually, they have a good program where you pay it in 24 hours, and you pay half of the ticket amount.
Yeah,
that's a real deal.
Well, I thought you had to pay on the spot or you don't leave the
station. No, that's the true corruption. But in terms of the actual
I mean, in the station, they will let you come back in 24 hours and pay?
No, if you go within 20 – if you get you a ticket. So that's if you don't want to deal with getting a ticket and you want to – you know, you're trying to fight the officer there and saying, hey, I don't think I should get a ticket.
Right, but they take you into the station right on the spot, don't they?
No,
As American, no?
No.
They write a ticket, you walk away with a ticket?
They'll write you a ticket, and then you go, and if you have within 24 hours, you go pay the ticket. Let's say
so if you're a one-time visitor, you take the ticket and you pocket it.
Yeah, well, you can do that. Yeah. I mean, you know,
in my experience, don't come back. They take your license.
Oh, they take your license.
And then you need to go, and then you get your license when you pay the ticket.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, I think there's different parts of – different stories for different parts of Mexico,
sure,
right?
Sure, absolutely.
But Hermosillo and Sonora, I'll tell you, I think Patrick touched on it early on, the Sonoran and the Arizona governors both are doing a good job of working together and trying to work through all of those kinks.
Yeah, and I what really we got sidetracked into the kind of the day-to-day street street cop traffic enforcement. I'm talking about you have to pay somebody off to get a business license, things like that, to do normal operations.
No, I've not experienced that at all. And perhaps because I did get some good counsel early on, both from a CPA and from the legal perspective.
Yeah.
But no, we haven't encountered any type of corruption. They say it's out there. I haven't seen it.
In my own personal little anecdote on that, and I have property in Rocky Point and going through rentals and stuff like that, the main thing I encountered was that nobody anywhere has an interest in telling you how to do things yourself.
Right.
Because everybody has a business to do it. And some of the – even right down to what does it take to pay your electric bill, which turns out to be incredibly simple, but nobody was there for years. People wanted to have a bill-paying service for you. And in point of fact, in the middle of town, there's an automated machine and you shove some – you get your bill and you shove some bills into it and it's paid. It's utterly simple. You can't do it online. It's without a Mexican bank account anyway. Right. So it involves a little bit, but it is – you know, but the interesting – thing for me is, and this maybe gets into some of the stuff Tara may talk about you know, getting people, you know, guidelines or whatever is, but nobody told you, gave you a list and said, here's the things you have to do and here's you how to go. Tara, if you wanted to comment on broadly the recommendations in this area that the town hall made.
Well, the first thing I'd say is it's a pretty quick read and it's on our website, which is at aztownhall.org, easy to find. But briefly, one of the key points that Hector touched on is having a guidebook and resources so that you can go down as an informed business person and start that business so that you don't have to learn from scratch and doing it the right way. And I know that Patrick and some folks he's working with are going to be working on putting something like that together. But also, I have sitting here with me two great resources on how to do business in Mexico if you're interested in that from Arizona. The final part that I would add before maybe Patrick adds on to that is that the Arizona Town Hall, we're not a business. We're a nonprofit. And our interest in why we do this is in furthering the economy and what is best for Arizona. What we know from the facts and research is that what is best for Arizona is to build a better relationship with Mexico, especially Sonora, and to get past some of the rhetoric that you mentioned earlier, some of the misperceptions, so that the businesses in Arizona can have these strong business relationships and people like Hector can continue to build these businesses.
I want to pick up on that and go first to Hector, but invite the others of you to respond as well. And this has to do with the kind of the reaction on the south of the border side to everything from SB 1070, which was Arizona specific, to the whole kind of build a wall rhetoric, not only the physical building of the wall, but the rhetoric surrounding that. How is that being reacted to? And is it just bothersome or is it also problematic in terms of business as well?
No, I think it's somewhat problematic. There's a few folks that I know. Listen, I think the folks from the middle and upper income that like to come to the U.S. and do their shopping, do their vacationing. I know a handful of them that refuse to come to the U.S. and do their vacation anymore. They're saying, hey, listen, we just feel like we're not welcome there. We feel like we're scared, especially after what happened at the Walmart, for example, in El Paso. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know, we feel like we're, you know, are we a target if we go out there? And I tell them it's not what necessarily what you hear. It's not the reality. It's just what we hear, for example, here in the U.S. of some of the stuff in Mexico with some of the crime.
Well, I was thinking there's an interesting parallel.
Yeah.
I get this from people, usually people without passports.
Right.
oh, you go, oh, that is that dangerous?
Yeah, scary.
And I said, well, no. You know, first of all, a lot more guns on the street here than there is there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yes, but I think there's so again, going back to that, is it problematic? Listen, I think there's the two sets of groups, folks that have a visa to be able to come over and do and visit the U.S. versus those who can't. And but the opinion is the U.S. is the bad guy in this thing because they mistreat them and they're not welcome here and so on and so forth. From a business perspective, it hasn't really affected that too much. I think the rhetoric is always negative, right? And so you sit there and say, well, you know, do I really want to do business with them? But when we're neighbors and this close, it only makes sense for both countries, and in this case, both states, to help each other out. And that's what we've been working on from the Arizona and Sonora side of it. But yeah, it's just if you ask the everyday person on the street, what do you think about the U.S.? They think the U.S. is the big bad bear.
I mean, I think the town hall has been really making a concerted effort since 2016 when we hosted the statewide town hall down in Tucson. And then one of the recommendations that came out of that town hall was to set up a town hall in Hermosillo. And we've been doing that for three consecutive years now. It builds bridges. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really big point to bring home. While there are lots of different organizations that are doing a lot of great things, the Arizona-Mexico Commission.
Are they involved in this?
Yeah. So the Arizona-Mexico Commission, and in particular the Legal Financial Services Committee, which I sit on, one of the ideas was we need to have better resource guides that bring it all together in terms of taking the knowledge that's in the mind of someone like Hector, you know, the knowledge that I have on the legal side, accountant side, you know, custom brokers, get all these important resources together in one room to be able to put a guidebook together in a digital format, which is really important because with the rules constantly changing, you need to have a mm-hmm. digital guide. Mm-hmm. But this whole idea of having resources in a one-stop shop was really important. And there's a lot of good resources out right there right now, but you just don't have a concentration of all that information as it relates to cross-border work in one spot. Mm-hmm. So the Arizona-Mexico Commission was very generous. They helped to sponsor the town hall with the specific goal of having discussion around what resources currently exist out there, what's working right and what's not working right, what do we need to fill in gaps.
I wanted to ask Hector a question, and you mentioned visas, and this, I think, is something that will surprise a lot of people. They know that we got border guards and walls being built and all the left, and more of those folks are more from Central America than Mexico, but some of them are Mexican, and historically, many of them have been. But at the same time, you mentioned visas. Lots and lots of Mexicans have visas of various time, and huge numbers cross the border every day to go shopping.
Right.
What does it take for a Mexican to get a visa to visit the U.S.?
There's really no qualifying. I mean, when you cross the border, when I drive across or if I fly across, I do have to fill out the immigration form.
No, but you're an American citizen.
Right, as a U.S. citizen.
For a Mexican to get a visa to visit
the U.S. They at minimum have to have worked in the same place for 1 year of history of working in the same place, good standing.
Okay, so they're not a kind of, quote, flight risk kind of.
That's exactly right. The flight risk is the right phrase. And the other part of it is, you know, do they own, you know, if they're a student, let's say somebody who's 21, 22, are they enrolled in school? Again, flight risk. And then the third is really, do they own property there? Do they have family there? The last thing that the consul general's office or the consulate out there really wants to hear is that, hey, all my brothers and sisters are living in Phoenix already, and I just rent a place here in Hermosillo, and I just want to go visit.
That's going to be a red flag.
It's a red flag.
But if it's the other way around, all my brothers and sisters are in Hermosillo, and I'm in school, and I have a job.
I want to go see the U.S. I want to see what this is all about. Okay. I want to visit the Grand Canyon or go shopping.
That
or
intent to return is the big key.
Yeah, and the key to intent to return, who it short circuits or who it causes a problem for, is the one who has family here and no particular ties to Mexico. Even if they do intend to return, they look like, well, probabilistically, it's probably not as good a bet.
That's exactly right.
So it's an individual call based on
individual
all of that.
Call. Yeah.
If you have serious ties in Mexico, basically you can get a visa, is what it sounds like.
As long as you've been in a job for a minimum 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to, before we run out here, is there you want to mention websites or contact information?
Sure. You know, I think the best site to go to for purposes of finding the Arizona-Mexico Town Hall report from 2019, as Tara said earlier, was aztownhall.org. And there's a particular link there that says past events. And there's an area that talks about Hermosillo in Mexico. So you can find it on that link there. Another good resource to find information is on the Arizona-Mexico Commission website. And obviously you can contact any three of us if you have any questions.
Okay,
as well.
And Tara, the site for Arizona Town Hall is?
AZTownHall.org.
Easy enough. Okay, I want to thank all of you, I'm sure we'll revisit this once again. We will come back in a minute with something completely different. I have a commentary on the internet meme that you may have seen. Okay, Boomer, I was provoked, let's say that, and I will respond in kind when we return in just a moment in the think tank.
Their eyes on fire. Oh, Mexico, it sounds so sweet with the sun sinking low, the moon so bright, might to light up the night, make everything all right.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
You probably heard this, okay, Boomer. It's an internet meme and a dismissive generational put-down. To be fair, the world being passed on by us baby boomers leaves a lot to be desired. Climate change threatens our way of life, wars everywhere, and half the country is not talking to the other half. You think this is new? Consider the world we baby boomers were born into. School drills where you hid under a desk to protect yourself not against a lone gunman, but from nuclear annihilation. Ever distribute booklets on how to build a nuclear bomb shelter in your basement? I remember that one as a Cub Scout project. Looking for a job? The newspaper had two help wanted sections, help wanted male and help wanted female. In half the country, there were separate sections for most everything, labeled whites only for some and colored for others, separate and very unequal. Pollution? You could dump open sewage into any stream or river, and no one gave it a thought. It was so bad that Cuyahoga River near Cleveland actually once caught on fire, and factories were free to belch anything at all into the air. Los Angeles had a permanent smog, and there was no such thing as a clear day, ever. And the country was as divided then as now. Once young boomers, at least the male ones, were subject to be drafted into a war that at best was none of our business, and at worst required that we fight and possibly die for what many of us thought was the wrong side. After the president referred to students as campus bums, a few days later, peaceful college students were shot and killed on an American campus. Worse yet, those doing the shooting wore uniforms, American military uniforms, in the heartland of America. At least in 9/11, the perpetrators were not our fellow citizens. Consider the emotional impact of that. 1968 in Chicago, the police engaged in what a presidential commission called a police riot. They brutally beat up demonstrators. Outrageous? Half the nation cheered them on. Object to any of this and you risk being labeled a traitor to your country. My country, right or wrong, we were told. Blind obedience. And a lot of boomers acted. Young people risked their lives and some were killed to fight legal segregation in the South. Millions marched against a war that many thought was not only wrong, but immoral. Starting with Earth Day in 1970, we began environmental consciousness. Civil rights, women's rights, environmental awareness, none of these were even given a thought until we boomers embraced these issues. The results were uneven, and there's a lot left to be done. We learned that there are powerful interests opposing most of these goals. Yeah, it's probably time for a new and energized generation to take over. We boomers inherited an imperfect world, and we're passing along an equally imperfect one. but we inherited a world where the assumption was that the only people suited to running things were selected from a small cadre of white males. Future generations will not be so hampered, and you can thank us for that. But that probably won't happen. As John Sebastian said, all the things we worked for, our kids assume. There's nothing new in wanting to see your elders move aside. But, okay, boomer, is that all you got? If you want to tell the older generation to get out of the way, at least do it with some panache. Wonder how to do that? Listen to the words of a Nobel laureate.
Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing.
That, not okay, boomer, is how you tell the older generation it's time to pass the torch. This is Mike O'Neill, and I'll see you next week in the think tank. And remember, it's always tempting to think that you're at the worst place in history, especially if you don't have much of a basis for comparison.
Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.